Also brave for recruitment, be like, hey, this is a split phase study. I know y'all got melasma, so you might come out of the study with half your face a lot more pigmented than the other half.
Yes, exactly. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Chemist Confessions podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Gloria.
And this is a human conversation on all the skincare science we talk about on the daily. And today we are talking about rice stuff.
Yay.
Any applause. If you're wondering about rice stuff, this is going to entail, I think it's a very popular category. Mm-hmm. We're back in the plant extracts. Mm-hmm.
After our little mini break last week. Mm-hmm. I will say rice stuff makes sense because I also feel like it's a cyclical thing. They mm-hmm. always come back up in terms of like social media, DIY mm-hmm. stuff, mm-hmm. and it's all linked with benefits that ranges from anti-aging, antioxidant, mm-hmm. to everything.
Exactly. So I made it my goal. I was going to tackle this category. Uh-huh. So let's go through it and let's just simply answer, what is this rice stuff in skincare? The way I went about this,
Victoria looks so tired. Yeah,
I'm going to try not to unravel so quickly, but basically, I think you can categorize them into three general arenas of mm-hmm. rice ingredients. So there's actual rice stuff, and that's with the inky of Oryza sativa. Mm-hmm. You usually get things like rice wax, mm-hmm. rice bran wax. You get powders and starches, mm-hmm. to even extracts.
So I think this arena is important from a chemist perspective because mm-hmm. they're what we call functionals. Mm-hmm. They're usually what we add to improve stability, mm-hmm. texture. They're not necessarily there to say, give you benefits like, oh, this is going to be anti-aging.
Exactly. I'm really glad you mentioned that because weirdly enough, whenever people mention rice stuff, like Gloria said, gets tied to a bunch of claims. But this is the breakdown of rice stuff. Okay, so typically consists of mainly starch, mm-hmm. about 70%. You get some polysaccharides, some simple sugars, and they also mention some lipids that are involved. So you get oleic and linoleic. Sometimes you will also get a few proteins, and they also mention some phenols. So if you remember back in our ginseng episode, we talk about phenols. These are the ones that get tied to antioxidants. So they do mention trace amounts of phenols mm-hmm. in rice. So that's one category. The second one we would consider is the fermented rice stuff. Ugh. So this is, I would feel like it's the general sake realm. Mm-hmm. Also another fancy schmancy realm of skincare. The inky would be things like Saccharomyces or rice ferment filtrate.
Mm-hmm. You see that a lot. Mm-hmm. You see that a lot in toners too.
Exactly. Moving on. I'm not even going to try to break this down.
To talk.
I want to just explain my thought process. So the third one is the yeast from fermented rice.
I see.
Yes. So this would be like rice adjacent stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is a very famous category. The ingredient, the IO would be something like Galactomyces ferment filtrate. And yes, that is the Pitera stuff.
I can hear the dollar bills falling from the sky.
Yep, exactly. Very fancy. This is all to say that I took a look at this entire realm mm-hmm. and I decided that because all of these, in terms of testing, different types of rice stuff. So like that's like rice extract to starches to waxes to like all different aspects. Very little clinical data.
Yes. So This is a behind the scenes chemist confessions fact for everyone. Some of these episodes, the shorter they are, the longer it actually took us to put together because we're spending hours staring at the screen going, what am I looking at?
Give me something.
Show me a sign.
Yeah. So I did not find a sign here. Mm. And I decided we are moving on from this.
We're not talking about rice anymore,
Victoria?
This is not
going to be about rice. This is going to be about rice adjacent molecule. This is going to be about kojic acid.
We did the bait and switch. Yeah. Yay.
Aha. We tricked you into another interesting active that's not really extracts.
Yes.
Okay. So we always talk about how a lot of these plant extracts, the actual efficacy comes from actual isolated molecules. Mm-hmm. So kojic acid is one of those. Mm-hmm. And this is a molecule. It's actually a byproduct from several species of fungi. And you're like, what? Mold that is used a lot in Japanese food fermentation.
Fun fact.
Yes.
I went to Japan last year.
Yes.
And we actually did a sake tour in Tokyo. Mm. Okay. The little side story here is, if you've been to Japan but haven't been to their like very local sake bars, highly recommend. It's so much fun. You go in there and you can pay basically a trial size. You don't have to commit to a full drink. They all have like cases of like hundreds of sake you can try from, and they give you a little pour for like 100 yen, which is like a dollar. And you can just try all these different types of sake, and amazing. But in the tour, they went through the process of making sake, and yeah, Koji and the fungi that Victoria was talking about is a key part of that, and it's also using making things like miso and everything else. So yeah, it's a very prevalent ingredient or prevalent process using Japanese food.
Also, going off tangent, sake in Japan just tastes different.
It's so good.
It is not the same as anything you get here. It's people. So
good. I have a bottle that like I brought back, and I was actually kind of upset with myself because we tried so many, and there's a couple I really like, and it's very different than anything you can find here. But at the time, I was like, oh, I can't commit. Maybe we'll pick some up at the airport. Don't wait till the airport. It don't have that good local stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Anyways. We digress.
Moving on from alcohol. So this is going to be about kojic acid. And so, you know where I guess it stemmed from and linked to. And ultimately, what it does is, it has been well studied as a tyrosinase inhibitor. And just a reminder, that is a very important part in the, I guess, fighting hyperpigmentation. Is how do we prevent tyrosinase from kicking off our pigmentation cycle? So that's really it. I answered this question by what you asked what rice stuff is. And I want to tell you, I don't want to answer your rice stuff question. And I want to say, why don't we talk about kojic acid instead?
Yeah, kojic acid. Excellent. So
Gloria's strategy is, let's change the subject. And I'm just like, no. Just let's just focus here on this semi-rice thing here.
Is this podcast going to turn into like the Kinder Egg of podcasts? Like, you don't know what you're going to open yourself into. Just like, kojic acid. Yeah. It's covered in rice, but kojic.
The trust level of the actual episode title decreasing significantly. anyway. So in the next segment, we're actually going to go into why is kojic acid a good ingredient that Gloria and I actually like. But before that, a quick break. Speaking of hyperpigmentation fighters like kojic acid, tranexamic acid is actually another great ingredient in this category. You'll often see it in hyperpigmentation serums, like our gold standard 30% glycolic acid and 5% tranexamic acid HA booster.
We purposely paired these two together, not just to tackle skin roughness and fine lines and wrinkles, but also your hyperpigmentation. Add a drop to your serum, mix well, use it as a nightly treatment, or just use the gold standard as a once a week wash-off mask. Make the chemist's creation do real work for your skin. And please use the coupon code CCPODCAST2024 for 15% off. We're back. So we have pivoted. We're no longer talking about rice stuff. We are now moving on to kojic acid.
All right. So yes, this segment is called, is kojic acid a hyperpigmentation sleeper?
Are you missing out?
Yeah.
Will it change your life if you add it to your routine?
Yeah.
Let's find out.
All right. But first, a preface.
This is Gloria's
like,
episode.
What now?
This is episode many
emotional turns. Yeah. All right, there is some pain with kojic acid studies.
Yes.
We will personally tell you that we know there's good kojic acid data out there, but a lot of them were actually done out in Asia, and they actually come with very little translation. So that's why what we share with you, you're going to feel it's a little brief, but know that there is more out there. All right. Now, kojic acid.
We're not going to start where you think we're going to start.
Gloria's like, good God. All right. I have to share a really fascinating kojic acid study. This is I want to call it mildly interesting, non-human in vivo kojic acid study. So they wanted to look at the melanogenesis inhibition property. And remember, keyword non-human. So they decided, oh, what a simple study. Why not add kojic acid to the water of black goldfish and see what happens? Fascinating enough, after 1 to 2 months, they found that the black goldfish turned to yellowish brown. And we'll show a picture of what actually is happening. Yes, you heard that correctly. And then later, they moved this goldfish. They kept it in water without kojic acid. And they saw that this goldfish turned back to its original black color.
All I can think of is in that tank, the fish was like, yo, Jeff, the water tastes a little weird, no?
And I'm sure they're looking at each other like, there's something, I think there's something wrong.
Jeff, you're fading. Stay with me.
Jeff, whatever you're doing, man, maybe you should stop.
Yeah, drink less water. Jeff's like,
mock, mock.
I just don't know who thought, like, who even, right? Proposed this.
Exactly. They're like, this is a good way to show that kojic acid is a tyrosinase inhibitor. Anyways, mind blown.
Yeah. You know, a lot of, like, classic actives in skincare have some old animal data. Mm-hmm. The most common ones are, like, in the rodent family, right? Like, guinea pigs or mice, you know, like, shave their hair and do some work to see if, you know, it could work topically as, I don't know, anything from pigmentation to protecting against UV radiation. Yeah. Goldfish, that's a new one. I have not seen this one before.
All right. Now let's get to the clotical. So
we're moving to the human realm now.
Yeah, humans. No more goldfish. All right. So our first clinical we're going to share is actually a comparative. Mm-hmm. However, this comparative is actually in combination with glycolic acid. So they wanted to see what would be the difference if they tested a 5% glycolic acid with 4% hydroquinone versus a 5% glycolic acid with 2% kojic acid.
That's really interesting. So it's almost like benching kojic directly against hydroquinone.
Yes, with the help of glycolic acid. So the other weird thing about this, it's split face. So Gloria and I feel like split face is pretty hard to do, especially with pigmentation.
Also brave for recruitment, be like, hey, this is a split face study. I know y'all got melasma. So you might come out of the study with half your face a lot more pigmented than the other half.
Yes, exactly. And also, you know, two products. This is for the right side. This is for the left side. Don't mix them. So it's generally tough all around. And also pigmentation is not symmetrical.
Right.
So you can have like more difficult, maybe stronger melasma on one side. I definitely have that, you know, a little bit under my right cheekbone versus my left. So anyways, so it's split face. They started out once a day, and then if the subject showed good tolerance, they bumped them up to using this twice a day, and they tested it for 3 months total. They tested it on 39 subjects, and through that, after 3 months of use, they mentioned that they saw some improvement, and that the reduction varied from 10 to 90%.
I'm sorry, what? Wow, I feel chipped if I'm in the 10% group.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's just classic like melasma situation. Yeah. It's just like you just don't know the improvement you'll actually see per patient.
I think last episode, the mandelic acid, when we talked about their hyperpigmentation, one of the metric was like, oh, like how many subjects saw over 50% improvement? And it's like half, right? Yeah. But if you think, it's like, it sounds kind of nice, but if you think about it, that means half of them saw improvement.
Yeah, or none.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exactly what happened here, you know. So about half of the patients had an equal reduction on both the kojic and hydroquinone side. Mm-hmm. 21% had better results on the hydroquinone side. Mm-hmm. 28% had better results with the kojic acid side. So generally, they performed about on par.
Yeah, I was going to say math says that most of them is like,
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think one other thing to keep in mind is that none of the patients were completely clear of hyperpigmentation in their follow-up photos. So
I think that does make sense, though. I think that's a definitely expectation thing to keep in mind in this realm. I think I'm especially a salty chemist when it comes to hyperpigmentation claims, because to me, that is the most abused category in terms of like erasing pigment in a week and this 100%. And that. And you're setting this is. It's just going to be disappointing. Yeah.
Expectations here very much mismanaged, and topicals can only carry you so far, especially with something like melasma.
Yeah.
And then the other side note that I thought was mildly interesting is every patient had some sort of burning and flaking
score
when using it. But kojic acid was surprisingly found to be more irritating
not score
than hydroquinone. So I do want to put that out there. Kojic acid seems to be, it's not necessarily your vanilla ingredient, but I don't think it's on people's radar.
No, because I think people do always associate hydroquinone as like some sort of hyperpigmentation benchmark, but also the irritation benchmark. Yes. And so you forget that there are things out there that sound vanilla just because it's not hydroquinone, but it can still be irritating. I want to mention that a while ago, we did a guest podcast with Skin Anarchy.
Yeah.
And we mentioned that hydroquinone is also benched against like a plant ingredient like silymarin, which is featured on Miss Reliable. And something like that, does show that, oh, okay, this isn't irritating at all compared to hydroquinone. But again, these metrics should all be, you know, talked about in the forefront to set expectations. Just, yeah, tough.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, we're going to move on. I did find a comparative study that actually wanted to compare 2% kojic acid versus 2% hydroquinone versus a 30% glycolic acid peel. Interesting. So this is also to treat melasma. And suspiciously, they only use the product for 1 month. And I think
that's super short for pigmentation.
Yes, exactly. So I think hyperpigmentation is the one skin concern, Gloria, and I like to remind people is to give it even up to 6 months to see a real benefit. So anyways, they had the subjects. So they had used 45 subjects. So think about it, divide by three, 15 subjects. It's very small. Yeah. Very small. They used these products twice a day and they took photographs. They had an expert grader and they did actual fancy imaging. They call theirs the cyoscopy, the spectrophotometric intracutaneous analysis.
Excellent.
I'll show Gloria the pictures. I would say that we really want to focus on the actual imaging. The photographs themselves is pretty tough because the lighting is not
consistent. Controlled.
The background is not consistent. So it's really hard to make any reference there. We're really just going to follow the visual evaluation and the actual imaging. After they took measurements at the 15-day mark and the 30-day mark. They did see a reduction in total melanin content for all three. However, I'll read you the actual measurement numbers. So for hydroquinone, they saw a 13% reduction.
Sick.
For the weekly glycolic acid peel, they saw a 9.8% reduction.
Wow.
And for kojic acid, they saw a 5.8% reduction, which I'm also thinking, like, do you even actually visually see anything? I'm not sure.
Yeah, 5%, if you can visually see a 5% improvement, you gotta be a very critical person.
Yeah,
that's tough.
Yeah, so anyways, I think, you know, in terms of the takeaway here, it's like, it does something. They do mention, you know, they say results show that 2% hydroquinone is better than glycolic acid, which is better than kojic acid. But all in all, you know, the groups are small. The testing timeline is short. The reduction is small. You know, it's really hard to have a real clear takeaway. I think for me, what I read here is that I just feel like they're all generally in the same space.
Yeah, and I do like the this part of the data where they talk about how the percent of subjects that saw improvement. In the hydroquinone group, even the hydroquinone group, 10 out of 15 showed improvement, which in its way is, it's like, it's okay. And then the kojic acid group, less than half of the people saw meaningful improvement.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's just like, okay, this doesn't, it's like directionally something's happening, but this study is a little too short to draw any firm conclusions.
Yeah. There's something there. But that's generally what we can say from
the early stages in the Beauty and the Beast song. Something's in the air. You just don't know what it is yet. You have to give it a chance, guys.
Never in a million years would I thought that reference would have made its way to Kojic Acid episode.
I'm a terrible singer. I was going to hum, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Moving on.
All right. A final clinical for you. So this one is a lot more robust. They actually wanted to compare 2% kojic acid versus a picosecond laser treatment. I thought was pretty cool. Lasers are definitely popular in hyperpigmentation. So they tested it on 300 patients.
Well.
Yes. And they basically wanted to look at the MASI score. That's the common scoring system they use for grading hyperpigmentation. So through that, they tested for 20 weeks. And from that, they saw that both groups had significant improvement in MASI scores. And they took it at time points weeks 12 and week 20. So I just want to emphasize, like, remember the previous test, only 1 month, and this guy's looking at it for 20 weeks.
Yeah.
They generally performed on par, but they did want to mention that in the picosecond laser group, the most remarkable improvement rate they saw was at 62%, whereas kojic acid, this group had an improvement about 42%. So they're trying to show that, like, you may see better improvement.
I will say though, 42%, we can work with that.
Yeah.
5%, I don't know what you're talking about. Timeline matters, guys.
Yeah, exactly. So their conclusion, they say, our study concludes that picosecond laser device is an efficient and well-tolerated therapeutic for melasma as compared to kojic acid. The kojic acid was actually the control group, which I really like because they're really trying to beat this metric, but they saw results.
Yeah. So that kind of sums up our top level kojic acid results. You can see that most of these studies test kojic acid 2%. Yeah. But what's interesting is if you start shopping for it, you'll quickly notice that most kojic acid products clock in at about 1%.
If they're transparent.
Yes. And we will say there are studies out there with 1%. But the reason why we didn't share any with you guys is
I can't read Japanese.
Yeah, a lot of them are old studies, or a lot of them are in foreign languages that's not translated.
Yeah.
It is 1% is more of that level that's like, it does something. It's often testing combinations.
Yes.
But also, it's less likely to irritate. Because remember, one of the studies Victoria just shared with you guys is that 2% can be on par in irritation with hydroquinone.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because when we were dabbling in a research, many of the clinicals actually just tested in combination with hydroquinone. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so they clearly are using this as almost like a sidekick. Mm-hmm. And that's generally how hyperpigmentation actives are anyways. And then finally, to wrap up, we just want to say that kojic acid, there's definitely data to say that is a very helpful tyrosinase inhibitor.
Yep.
I would want to say that's actually better than a lot of the claimed tyrosinase inhibitors out there. There are so many, again, plant stuff that gets touted to help, but very little data behind it.
Yeah, so tyrosinase, again, as a quick recap, is that enzyme that controls how fast melanin is produced. That's why it's often a target to, mm-hmm. Slow down hyperpigmentation mm-hmm. and resolve that. And there are a lot of different ways to test whether or not something is a tyrosinase inhibitor. And one of the models is like a mushroom cell. It's like the mushroom test to tyrosinase inhibition. How that translates to applying topically on your skin, again, that's step zero. And like Victoria mentioned, a lot of plant stuff, that's what they're basing it on. They mm-hmm. say, hey, it works in a mushroom cell culture, must work for your skin.
Yeah, it's the truth. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, so that wraps up the kojic acid data on this rice stuff episode. We're going to take a quick break with our animal fun fact of the day.
Yay, it's not my turn. So you guys can rest easy. It might be a nicer one.
All right, hear me out. This is for your trivia night. Owls don't have eyeballs. Owls have eye tubes. Okay. So apparently, because they hunt at night, they have massive eye tubes.
Uh-huh.
This is because owls have very small skulls, so their big eyes just can't expand out, and the way they grow is, or like developed, is into more of a rod shape. Ooh. And I'll show that image here. Very funky.
Oh, that is so interesting.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that led me down a rabbit hole of, those eyeballs must make their biology very funky.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of like super passionate biologists about owls, and they share a lot of really interesting things. Like, I'm sure we know their head swivel ability is very funky, mm-hmm. up to 270 degrees. And I have to note, one guy, the way he described it was like almost silently, like, like it was some like office chair. Like, really funky. So I was like, okay. And funny enough, in order for them to swivel, you imagine like their necks and what is inside their necks. If you think about like their bone structure and their jugular, it has to be arranged in a super unique way in order for them to swivel without cutting circulation off.
Mm-hmm. that makes sense.
So I'll show an image here for those who are watching us on YouTube. I'll describe it for those who are listening in on it. But basically, their jugular veins are kind of look what like a four-string mop.
Oh, so interesting.
When it swivels all the way, they don't entangle or pinch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I was like, wow, I didn't even think about that. But anyways, that's your animal fun fact of the day. Owls don't have eyeballs. They have eye tubes. And their jugular veins are very weird.
So if that comes up in your local trivia night, let us know. And if you propose it.
Yes. And if you share this with your significant other or use it to woo a lady or man, please let us know.
It works. It will totally work.
Hey, baby, did you know? All right. So that is the owl. Gloria, aren't you so happy I did the animal fun fact today? All All right. So we're going to wrap this up with how to shop for kojic acid.
All right. Number one.
Gloria, please take it away.
If you buy a kojic acid product, you open it, you're like, oh, okay, this is fine and stuff. You put it back on your shelf, forget about it. And you're like, all right, you know what? I'm going to commit. I'm going to be very consistent with it. I'm going to finish up my kojic acid serum. And then you pump it out. You're like, huh.
This doesn't look the same color.
It looks a little bit on the black side.
Yes, black.
Kojic acid is unstable. It's not your imagination. So it's one of those products that you should store in a dark, cool place and use up as soon as you open it. And keep in mind that, I mean, every kojic acid product's default color is a little different. Mm. But if it comes out already quite dark, that is a solid sign that it is poorly formulated and you should not buy from that brand again.
Yeah, all good actives. Something funky about that. All right, so knowing that, we do want to remind you that this is again one of those actives that please shop for the isolated compound. Don't actually shop for those general extracts that Gloria loves us. They always say rich in. Yeah, don't buy those.
Yeah.
So no kojic acid rich stuff.
Yeah.
Look for the actual kojic acid in the inky. And then finally, in terms of where to use in your routine,
They typically come in water-based serum form, so we'll use it as pretty much a first step after cleansing. Mm-hmm. If you use toners or other hydrating products, those can go before kojic acid, but don't use it after your cream.
Yeah, and we will say most of the clinos out there are using this twice a day. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. And also for percentages, we'd like you to try to aim for at least 1%. And this can get pretty hard because a lot of hyperpigmentation serums may add it, but it's not clear how much you're getting. And we will say a lot of them look like more just like a dash or a sprinkle than an actual robust amount.
Yeah, but side note, a 1% serum is like the goal here. For a while there, kojic acid soap is also really popular. Again, most of the studies we've seen is leave-on, use twice a day. Using it in soap form, it may or may not supplement your routine or like, you know, for your body pigmentation as a helper. But we would say that's not the most, the best way to get that 1% topical benefit that we're targeting.
That's a good point. All right, let's walk through some products. So, Hyper Skin, their brightening dark spot vitamin C serum, that one we know for a fact has 1% kojic acid. So that's one area you can look at. We actually do want to focus on SkinCeuticals discoloration defense dark spot serum. This one is great because they actually did a clinical and shared it in a publication. I want to say this is actually a classic example of how kojic acid used. It's used in combination with other actives. So in this serum, they're actually also including 3% tranexamic acid, which we also like. They use 5% niacinamide and 5% Hepes, which is generally an exfoliator. Think of it like that. What we really like is they shared their clinical where they tested on 55 subjects. These subjects have hyperpigmentation, PIH, and melasma, and they had these subjects use their discoloration defense serum for 12 weeks, twice a day. And we'll show their results here. They actually took some imaging, and this is the kind of imaging that we really like. It's standardized. The lighting is generally the same. And you can see some improvement after 12 weeks. And they did find significant improvement in PIH, hyperpigmentation, melasma, skin texture, and skin tone. So I thought that was a really great share and does, I generally feel like, justify a higher price tag.
Yeah, and I think for pigmentation especially, I think when so many products come in blends, this is like a much clearer picture in terms of what you can expect. So yeah, definitely appreciate the clinical.
With that, hopefully that gives you a couple ideas of how to shop for this ingredient. I did want to note one side note. When I was looking at the product landscape and you quickly Google kojic acid skincare on Google, many of the products suggested do not have kojic acid. So
shame, Google.
And so letting you guys know, so definitely do check the ingredient list to make sure you're actually getting this active. And then finally, to circle back, bring it all back to what this episode was.
Circle episode.
Rice stuff. I think there is one burning question probably a lot of listeners and viewers have about rice stuff, and that's Pitera. You're probably wondering, SK2's facial essence, is that worth the price tag? Gloria, do you have any thoughts?
Oh, me. Well, I will say, like a lot of plant stuff, especially when we're talking about like a more general name, like something, something filtrate, something, something extract, quality matters. as a chemist, that is a lot of our job. Is if we're on next episode preview, we're gonna talk about Centella Asiatica. There are 1,000 different ways you can buy, you can get Centella Asiatica, but the quality and the active level is different. So we'll say the main SK2 facial essence, obviously it's like 99% galactomyces from infiltrate, that Victoria mentioned in the beginning of the episode. It's the OG. Nowadays you can find dupes of it, or like other brands that offers very similar products.
Like COSRX.
Yeah, and a much, much more friendly price point. Yeah. We will say it's hard to say, oh, you know, in terms of the benefits you're getting, is it the same? Mm-hmm. Is it the same sourcing? Because that stuff matters. So generally speaking, we'll say, you know, I might still aim to get the SK2 if I really want to see what the fuss is about.
Yeah.
Something like a COSRX is not a bad place to start, but I think even as you try both of them, you might notice that it's hard to compare because they are not the same thing.
Yeah, and most likely our guess here is that SK2 has a proprietary sourcing here, and as it's been in their repertoire for many decades, I think this product has been around for who knows, and we're not the insider, like we couldn't tell you. So I totally agree with you. I think that sourcing matters. So there is this, I also would feel like I think I would also lean towards the SK2 here. Yeah. Also because COSRX doesn't have any data. So I'm like, not really sure. Yeah. So that's our general feel. It's not a great answer, but I think that is just how, like, that's just how we navigate more elusive products.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just really don't know.
Yeah. But we'll say me on a personal level, I tend not to care for super proprietary ingredients like this because generally speaking, even the SK2, I can't really tell you exactly what it is. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully that helps answer one of the more popular questions we get. But otherwise, we hope this episode has been helpful in kind of explaining the greatness, but also the woes of kojic acid. Gloria, where can they find us?
You can find us on our website at chemistconfessions.com. Mm-hmm. You can write to us info@chemistconfessions.com. DM us on Instagram at chemist.confessions, and keep an eye out on all of our stories where we pull you for your skincare questions that help us shape these episodes. And I'll see you guys next week.
Yay! Thank you guys. Bye-bye.